Hello and welcome to the Nashville Daily Podcast. I'm Stuart Deming.
And I'm Aaron Pennington.
A flower that blooms once every 8 to 10 years is hitting the live stream in Nashville.
A worship protest over the weekend brought about mixed reviews of COVID policy.
Plus, we reach back into an era of history when Nashville was the booming transportation hub of the South.
We'll talk about all of this and more on Nashville Daily. You're going to want to stay tuned for this episode. We have a lot to unpack in this episode. We go all over the place in Nashville. We're even traveling back in time. So you're going to want to stay tuned for the rest of this episode. As far as staying tuned beyond this episode, what Stuart and I do, maybe we're going to smell the rotting flesh of a flower bloom. If we do so, we'll post it up on our texting platform, 615-392-1358. If you want to, if we go and do that, we're definitely going to record our reaction because you won't want to miss what we're talking about later in this episode. It's very, very interesting. But we can't wait to see you on this platform at 615-392-1358, Texas, and we will be on there texting back with you.
Traffic patterns here in the city of Nashville are so interesting. So I was driving on 440 and 65 South was completely backed up to the point where like 2 miles onto 440, the exit ramp to 65 was backed up on 440. And then 440 was a dead stop at Nolensville Pike. It was a really interesting driving experience trying to come home because I'm like, Google Maps is saying 36 minutes and I still beat Google Maps, even with the traffic patterns.
That's good. That's really good. I think my latest qualms with Nashville traffic is not necessarily with traffic itself lately. It's been with the conditions of the roads lately. I mean, it seems like the current solution are a lot of temporary fixes, such as slapping giant metal pallets or whatever you call them just over where things are bad.
It's because we can't afford pavement.
and so... I mean, it's just causing a lot of damage. And also where the little, these little grates are in the road, there's like a good foot dip down in these. I was driving in the kind of the Green Hills, Lipscomb, Belmont area, and they are everywhere. And you just have to swerve around them everywhere.
They were, I think because of maybe the elevation level of that street, they had to go a little bit lower because of the rain density. I'm not really sure.
That's my latest qualm with Nashville traffic is the roads.
They're awful right now.
They're getting pretty bad. They are. 440 is the only thing that got some care over 2020.
Or some love, some good love. All right, so let's talk about some events happening in Nashville. You have Chihuly at Cheekwood. This is happening until January 10th of 2021, so you still have a little bit of time to get there.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. But the thing that is very time sensitive is Cheekwood Harvest, and this is ending November 1st.
So the Titans are going to play the Buffalo Bills tonight at 6 p.m., so make sure to tune your scanner to see that game. You can find
scanner
all the details. Yeah, you don't use a you don't tune your television anymore.
No.
Okay, just me. All right,
you can. So when anyone says a scanner, I think of like a police scanner. That I used to listen to police scanners for fun. I didn't know you could scan a football game.
I don't know. Who knows? But you can find their complete kind of TV schedule and radio schedule online. That is in the show notes. Headquarters Beercade. I always want to say like a barcade or something like that. Headquarters Beercade. They're having their Tipsy Theater
and they're showing
tonight.
Yeah, so they're showing Hocus Pocus and the Blair Witch Project.
Which Hocus Pocus, you just recently saw that in theaters.
Yes.
I actually rewatched that the other day as well. How was your experience in theaters?
So that was the first time I ever seen Hocus Pocus in theaters. And now, unfortunately, all Regal theaters are closed nationwide. So welcome to America. but it was a great experience because I've never seen it on such a big screen like that.
It's a long movie.
It seems like a long movie.
It felt long. It's been so long since I've seen it.
It's a movie I watch every year. I mean, we actually had
I thought you said you hadn't seen it.
No, I've seen Hocus Pocus.
Oh, okay. Oh,
no, I watch Hocus Pocus every year.
Okay.
Yeah. We actually did an episode, I think it was episode 200. This is episode 349. I think it was episode 200 where we talk about some of our favorite TV shows
That's
and
right.
movies.
Yeah, yeah.
You can go all the way back to listen to that episode to see what we talk about.
And then here is an event that TPAC is hosting at 7 p.m. So if you're not going to be watching the Titans game and you want to attend this TPAC event, it is Dance Like Your Zoom Camera Is Off.
But now, it's actually on Zoom.
But it's on Zoom. Let me just say, if somebody told me, Aaron, you need to dance like your Zoom camera is off, I'm going to say, who are you? How did you get into my apartment? And why are you telling me to dance like this? Like, I don't know that you can find more details for if this event sounds like it's for you. There are more details in the show notes. Something else that is happening over the interwebs is coming from the Nashville Zoo. So it's something really cool. News Channel 5 is bringing a lot of information on this. They are preparing, National Zoo is preparing for the rare bloom of corpse flower. So the corpse flower is a flower that was actually planted at Vanderbilt in 2012 in its greenhouses. When the greenhouses closed, the university donated this flower to the National Zoo. A little bit about the flower because it's very interesting. It is referred as the corpse flower. It has a very, very hard to pronounce scientific name. The plant is one of the tallest flowers in the world, growing typically about 10 feet tall. And it's also known for releasing an odor comparable to rotting flesh when it blooms. And that bloom happens only once every 8 to 10 years.
So the bloom may not even happen this year, but they set up a live stream camera where you can go to the NashvilleZoo.com.
So they don't even know if it's going to happen.
They don't know if it's going to happen because it could happen 8, 9, or 10 years
from
when it was initially planted. Imagine being the guy like, okay, so Vanderbilt donated this to the zoo. Imagine being the guy's like, hey, we have this flower. It's very, very precious. And you have to transport this thing.
And it smells like rotting flesh when it blooms.
I wonder how much that guy got paid to transport this flower from the greenhouse at Vanderbilt to the Nashville Zoo.
Maybe Vanderbilt did it. Who knows? But it should be interesting. There's a live stream that you can watch on their website to see, you know, like if it's blooming, you can, you know, see it in real time.
I watched the live stream. I had it on for about 15 minutes yesterday.
Anything happen?
And it was exactly like watching paint dry on your wall.
So maybe somebody will like tweet out when it's happening. I don't know how long it's going to take to bloom. I wish they knew like, oh, it takes 10 minutes for it to like fully go from like it's non-bloomed to fully bloomed. I wish we knew how long that would take. That means should we be watching it full time to make sure we're seeing it live, or, you know, if somebody tweets it out, can we still get there and not miss the moment? So that's happening at the Nashville Zoo. What's happening in downtown Nashville in recent news from the weekend, the health department is investigating a worship protest that drew an estimated somewhere between 9,000 and 10,000 people, it seems like. There was
downtown at the courthouse.
Yeah, so yes. This was at the courthouse, and this happened Sunday night. It was led by I don't know how to pronounce this guy's last name.
Sonfechi?
It's a guy named Sean who's from California,
yeah,
and he's hosted these across the nation. There's a lot of things to unpack here with this article. So I'm in the Tennessee, and if you want to kind of read up more about this, the link will be in the show notes. But apparently, I believe Metro PD is looking into this. The health department's looking into this because this worship protest happened without permits. And it also happened from what we're seeing with a lot of social media posts, or it happened with a lot of people in close proximity singing and stuff without masks. There were a few people social distanced, more kind of the back of this area, but a lot of people not. So it's a very interesting scenario for Nashville. You know, pretty much we don't know exactly a lot of the details that Metro is looking into. Mostly, I think it's the lack of the permitting, because a lot of people here in Nashville, especially churches, are wanting to host larger crowd sizes and stuff, and they can't do that without a permit. And I think even the max is close to 500 now that they will be allowed.
Churches don't have a restriction. It's other event venues that have the restrictions.
I know there. I think there are still some permits if you want to host it within maybe an indoor venue. Yeah. I still think there may be some kind of permits if you want to host a larger size crowd.
Yep.
Because it's such the weird thing between the church and COVID, because I think your freedom to associate is still there, but if you want to do it in a building that still has codes and everything, you still need to get some permits. It's a very, very interesting balance that's trying to be achieved right now. And even this situation that we see right here with the worship protest with up to possibly 10,000 people is a very interesting thing. And the only really thing that I would point out with what's happening here, because I've seen on social media people saying like it's disgusting what happened, that people are going out to worship and being close together and all this stuff, and you know, people are saying how terrible this is and everything, and you know, not to say that people should be that close together. I probably wouldn't have gone, because you know, a lot of with the work that we do, we need to go and you know, meet other people, and I don't want to put myself in a position to possibly contract COVID during that time. And with an event that large, there is that chance of doing that. It's a lot of times the language that's used here in Nashville for different types of events doesn't seem to be very consistent. So we see a lot of negative rhetoric used in a lot of different organizations that are saying, okay, they're saying negative things about this event because of the large gathering of people without masks. But what we've also seen are the protests that have happened in Nashville. A lot of the same organizations or the same people who are disavowing this event did not, in fact, say the same or make the same questions about the protests. They didn't question whether people were wearing a mask. They didn't question whether there were permits. They didn't question all of these things. So the rhetoric is very different between, okay, we are going to look into this because there were a large group of people without masks, but also the protest, there wasn't any chance of looking into those to see if it was it a social gathering of over 25 people without masks. There were plenty of those within the last month. Many that probably weren't permitted or permitted by Metro, and those were not looked into. So it's a very interesting thing that we are seeing here, because I believe that if you are going to protest, I do believe that these people should have set up some permitting or things like that. But they're, from what I'm reading, it doesn't seem like that's their MO. They're not in the business of going about getting the permits and doing all that stuff. But I believe you should. If you're going to do this and have the protest, get the permits, do all that stuff. And the other interesting thing is there's a lot of language in this Tennessean pretty much saying, you can go through the article and read this, that they've quoted some experts saying, at a large event where people are this close together, you are almost 100% likely somebody contracted the virus by being there. But when asked for, I can't remember who it was, some media outlet asked John Cooper if he was going to talk to protesters, a large protest that was happening in Nashville, if they were going to cancel it because of COVID concerns. John Cooper said that, you know, they're outside and they have the opportunity to be social distance, so I'm not going to ask them to cancel the event, because he said there's, you know, as long as you are outdoors, you have the opportunity, there's no risk that we've seen so far. And then now that we have something not protest related from the normal protests at the Capitol that we've seen, there's this language being used that we didn't see apply equally to other events throughout the city. But let us know your thoughts and what you think. Text us at 615-392-1358. Let us know what you think about this situation. Should the health department be looking into this, or have you seen this same pattern of inconsistent language that's used here in this city among the outdoor events that have happened here in Nashville?
Today's episode of Nashville Daily is brought to you by Screen Threads. If you're looking for Nashville merchandise, look no further. Our listeners can use the code Nashville Daily to get 10% off their next online order or in-person visit. You can find them inside of Marathon Village or head to screenthreads.com.
All right. So on a lighter note, we get to talk about some food here in Nashville and some local food. Stuart, I'm going to lead off with you to talk about your delicious meal.
So the last time I went to the movie theaters was last Tuesday, and I saw Tenet again in theaters one more time before the theaters closed down.
Nice.
And afterwards, I went to Hugh Baby's in Berry Hill, and I had the double cheeseburger with French fries, and then I had their brand new orange creamsicle milkshake.
Ooh, that's amazing. How was it?
It was really good. I wish it had a little bit more vanilla ice cream in it.
Okay.
The orange creamsicle was a little bit overwhelming.
Okay.
Especially at the bottom. But the milkshake, the milkshake with the French fries was fantastic.
That's awesome. So I had, I still have a few local places that I ate not in Nashville that I want to give a shout out to. One is Anaheim Chili. And since I'm doing keto, chili's kind of keto friendly, you just got to make sure you watch what you order a little bit, but, Anaheim Chili, they are from Huntsville and their menu is just absolutely amazing. They were out of a few chilies that I wanted to get in there, but, one of the chilies that I had was the Cincinnati chili. And the Cincinnati chili was just absolutely incredible. That was, I think that may be my new favorite type of chili because they have, I believe it's some kind of cinnamon spice inside of their chili. And there's one more kind of spice that they have in their chili. I can't remember exactly what it was. They also have one of the things that was not keto friendly in there. They have kind of macaroni noodles inside of the Cincinnati chili, but this the spices in there made it a really unique experience. So I'm glad I had it. Also had their classic chili and I believe kind of a white chicken chili.
Okay. It's kind of like the whole hot dog debate. Like who has a better hot dog? Is it Cincinnati? Is it Pittsburgh? Is it Boston? Is it Chicago? And I wonder if the Cincinnati hot dog, like the theme hot dog from that city, is the same as their chili.
So Cincinnati does something interesting because they have a brand that's pretty well known called Skyline Chili in Cincinnati. So I think Cincinnati's hot dog is like that Skyline Chili on top of the hot dog. So I don't know. I might vote Cincinnati just because of that combination right there. But there's definitely a lot of different types of chili. They even have a Texas chili on their menu, and so they cook everything, a bunch of different types of chili, but it was really, really good.
Well, now I'm really hungry.
Well, we'll get you even more hungry for knowledge, that is, with Explorers Nashville Tip of the Day.
For Explorers Nashville Tip of the Day, it's a great day to head to the Germantown neighborhood and experience the Tennessee State Museum. I think they have 6 permanent exhibits. They have some temporary exhibits right now. I'm not sure what they are, but Aaron,
I think it's mostly the ratified.
Oh, it's the ratified
exhibit.
Okay.
Yeah,
that's definitely a temporary for the next year. And the ratified is the women's suffrage movement that happened in 1920. We have a whole week of episodes dedicated to that back in August, and we'll put that in our show notes.
Yeah, so I talked about going to the Tennessee State Museum yesterday. I don't think there's a limit of the number of times you can go to Tennessee State Museum and continue to learn things. There's always going to be something new to catch your eye, and the temporary exhibits provide a good bit of new learning as well. So also, you're hungry for knowledge, go to the Tennessee State Museum, and then, you're there for quite a while. So you're now hungry for food. So a good place to go and grab some food, whether it's lunch or dinner, because you're there until it closes, is the farmer's market.
Yeah, so the farmer's market has a 16 to 20 different variety of restaurants inside. They also have vendors outside, so you can go get some tomatoes and apples and just eat those if you want.
Pumpkins now, pumpkins are pretty much there all through, I guess, the rest of October.
Yeah, so you basically just grab a pumpkin, go buy Centennial, and just start digging into that pumpkin. I don't know. I've never done that experience, but it may be interesting.
Or, you know, you could take it home if you wanted to.
You could take it home and actually bake it.
All right, so head over to the Tennessee State Museum, grab some lunch at the Farmers Market. That is Explorers Nashville Tip of the Day. If you know somebody who loves pumpkins at the farmer's market as much as you do, go ahead and share this episode with them, and be sure to rate this podcast 5 stars. It would mean a lot to us. And if you want even more, you can get that with a Patreon subscription. You get an early release of the Nashville story, which last week's story was absolutely incredible. We were thankful to have Chris Keaton on. So make sure to go listen to that episode if you have not. It'll make you just a little bit more of a dapper person. That episode with Chris Keaton is in the show notes. Also, with that Patreon subscription, you get a limited edition Nashville Daily coffee mug. You will be the envy of your breakfast table with that limited edition Nashville Daily coffee mug that is available for all new Patreon subscribers, along with that early release of the Nashville story. So head on over to NashvilleDailyPodcast.com to learn more.
All right, we're going back into history, particularly in the time frame of Nashville in the 1850s, and we're stepping back into history.
That's 170 years ago.
That's crazy.
That's wild.
That's insane. So previously on our history episode, we concluded that the Tennessee State, not the Tennessee State Museum, the Tennessee State Capitol and the construction of the Tennessee State Capitol. That's the last history episode we did. That will be in the show notes. But now we're talking
What did they do with the Tennessee State Capitol?
They built it.
Where?
They built it on Capitol Hill.
They finally came to a conclusion
in 1843
of where the Capitol should be.
Permanent conclusion of where it should be. And then the construction started in 1845, finished in 1859.
So at this time, we still didn't, that we're going to be talking about now, Nashville actually didn't have a Capitol building completed yet. Partially. Depending on what year we're talking about. Yeah.
Until 1859. And 1859 was a big year for Nashville. And we'll talk about that here in a second. But we got to start with this. In 1851, gas lights were provided by the Nashville Gas Company to light up the city at night for the very first time.
Wow. Could you imagine the move from having to, I guess, either at that time, I'm wondering if it was lighting up all the individual lanterns or turning on the individual kind of gas things for every single light throughout downtown Nashville.
I don't know. They probably had a full-time person literally just turning on lights and then and then another full-time person turning off lights.
Well, we do have that in modern day Nashville, and that's the Christmas decorations that happen in the big Nashville places like Chicwood and Opry. We have pretty much have full-time people putting up and taking down lights, so it's not too different now.
Yeah, it's the same technology, just a little bit different. That's gas-driven. This is power-driven.
It's the same, but different. So in 1852, 1 year later, after we had this fantastic light show thanks to the Nashville Gas Company, there were some Nashville City aldermen, and they authorized the establishment of a public school system, and the name of that first public high school that opened up in 1855, so it still took 3 years to get this off the ground, was Hume School. And that may sound familiar to some of you.
Today it's called Hume Fog Academic Magnet High School.
All right. So, and the location of that is actually fairly, maybe closer than people think.
It's probably the only school on this street that's especially in downtown Nashville. I think it's actually the only school in downtown Nashville.
I think it is.
In the main core. And this is on Broadway. So you could literally go honky-tonking, and then you pass this castle-looking building on 8th and Broadway, and you're like, what is that building? And you're like, oh, that's a high school? That's kind of crazy.
I know. It is a very weird spot for a high school, but that's because Hume School opened up in 1855. All right, so 1 year before 1855, that Hume School, Nashville's first Jewish congregation is officially incorporated as Kol Kodesh Mogen David, or Holy Communion of the Shield of David, and partly in honor of Davidson County. So interesting name, but has relation to Davidson County. In 1855, Nashville hosts the first state fair.
I have no idea where that was hosted. I wonder if it was at the fairgrounds or somewhere else. I literally have no idea where that was hosted.
Well, it is interesting because fairs in Nashville are very interesting. If you remember our episodes with Brad and Sarah, and one of our first episodes with them, they're from the Battle of Franklin Trust. They're very deep into kind of Civil War history in Nashville. While there was a battle going on in Nashville in the Civil War, so we really kind of technically haven't gotten to this on our history episodes yet, there was actually like a circus going on in Nashville for like in the middle of town.
Yeah, literally a mile away from Fort Naglee, there was a circus happening during the Battle of Nashville. That's just, it's just so crazy. And I cannot wait to talk about more history once we get to that in November. But in 1856, I think this is the most fascinating thing out of the 1850s. Nashvillian William Walker becomes president of Nicaragua and tries to unite Central America countries. He is executed by firing squad following an attempt to capture Honduras in 1860.
We're going to need to look into that a little bit more because that came out of nowhere.
And he was a lawyer here in Nashville, and then he became a president, and then he tried to combine Latin American countries. Like, that's pretty cool.
It's very, very interesting. We're definitely going to need to learn more about that. You'll definitely hear a follow-up from us about that.
But now we need to go back. We need to rewind about 6 years, and we're going back to 1850. And in 1850, something significant happened here in the city of Nashville, and that was the delivery of the first steam engine locomotive on the Cumberland River into downtown Nashville. And the steam engine locomotive was actually delivered by a steamboat.
Into downtown Nashville.
And it reminds me of my time in Italy when I was on a train, on a boat, sitting next to a Mike's motorcycle. It was insane.
It's what it feels like if you're going on a ferry, but you drive your car on a ferry. It's like, oh, this is really weird. I'm just sitting in my car. In a ferry.
In a boat.
On a boat.
And they just think of that Lonely Island song, I'm on a boat. In your car. Yeah, so it's the 1850s, I think the thing that stands out about Nashville is this is the era of the railroad for the city of Nashville. Like, this is when the railroad was coming and being built, was the 1850s.
This was a super, super competitive industry because a lot of goods could be transported faster by railroad instead of waterways. So this was a very, very important thing to establish. And if Nashville could be a central location for that, because Cumberland River has provided that opportunity for Nashville to be kind of a waterway that leads down from the north into the south. And then also the railroad opportunity provides opportunity in Nashville from north to south and east to west. So the railroad is very, very significant for Nashville. It symbolizes a lot of commerce that Nashville gets to be a hub of during this time. So like Stuart said, there was a steam engine locomotive that arrived in Nashville in 1850, delivered by a commercial steam boat. The Nashville and Chattanooga, so one of those east to west lines, reached Antioch in 1851, and it reached Chattanooga in 1854 after the construction of a 2,200-foot tunnel through the mountains. I cannot imagine digging a tunnel through those mountains.
That is so crazy. But another thing about 1850 is we have to go back a little bit more to 1850. 1850 is like this pivotal year in Nashville for a lot of reasons. We're going to be talking about this for 3 days. So the Louisville-Nashville Railroad was born on March 5th, 1850.
So that was the start of that construction. And funny enough, a lot of the investment in that was actually from Louisville. Louisville invested, I think at the time, is $3 million to finance that construction. And they wanted to get their commerce south. And that was their advantage, is getting their commerce to south. Once it got to Nashville, it could then go north, south, east, west, kind of in those directions. So as soon as it could get it to Nashville, they knew that that was going to be key.
But what's interesting about that is, so they laid the track, or they started setting the track from Louisville down to Nashville. And the state of Tennessee didn't approve it at all yet until 1851.
Wow.
It took a whole year for this company to establish just to make a presence in Tennessee to say, hey, can we get this passed? Can we get a train line like 50 miles to go into Nashville? And the train line wasn't actually finished until 1859. And November 4th, around October, November, that was the first time a train operated all the way from Louisville to Nashville.
And one of the most interesting things about this first 187-mile trip, there were 300 people that traveled this, and they took the blasting speed of 15 miles per hour to Nashville.
But they only traveled 8 miles of that trip for the first time. So they didn't even go the whole way. So
they just took off. Everybody said, we're going 15 miles an hour. And then everybody's like, okay, get off. We actually got to transport someone with this.
We have to send some whiskey down to Tennessee. It's really interesting because whiskey laws didn't exist until this time. Like 1850s is when taxes started to happen on whiskey. So it's such an interesting time period. And this is 10 years before the Civil War.
Yeah.
And America was about to change. And we're going to learn more about that over the next few days. But one thing I did want to point out from my research of the Louisville to Nashville Railway.
The L&N, the famous L&N. Monopoly railroad line that's on the Monopoly board.
That's exactly what it is. At one point, it grew to a size of 6,000 miles of track.
Wow.
And it went through 13 different states.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
So their investment and their hunch was not wrong.
Not wrong at all.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So stay tuned. We're going to stay in this era, in the 1850s era, on tomorrow's episode when things go a little bit south, pun intended. All right. Our local artist of the day is Sarah Harrelson, and her song is Get Lost in Some Rock and Roll. Everybody could do that once in a while, get lost in some good rock and roll. You can find her Spotify link in the show notes as well as her website. That'll be in there as well. If you want to listen to all of the artists who have been featured here, you can search into Spotify, Nashville Daily Artist of the Day. That playlist will be right there and waiting for you. A little bit about Sarah. She's been in here in Nashville for 7 years, and her favorite restaurant is a very, very good one. It's Bakersfield in downtown Nashville.
So this is like a gourmet taco shop in downtown Nashville off of 3rd and Demumbrian, and they have delicious cocktails and tacos.
You can't go wrong with Bakersfield. They do a lot right. They have kind of flights and with their drinks and everything, and their food is excellent. All right, so here is Sarah Harrelson with her song, Get Lost in Some Rock and Roll.
Let's sit down to forever where the blacktop turns into gravel, put it in park, let the midnight call. Turn it up, let's get it on. Let's get caught up in the sun, south of the city, right at the edge of the static. We're at the Hotel California.
was Sarah Harrelson with Get Lost in Some Rock and Roll.
All right, tomorrow we're talking about some more history from the 1850s, but we're not just focusing on Nashville. We have to talk about a little bit about what's happening in the United States at this time as well.
Nashville ends up becoming a pretty influential figure during this time. See you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to Nashville Daily. You can check us out over on Instagram at xplr.nash, as well as our YouTube channel, xplr.nash. For Nashville merch, we have you covered as well. Find that at xplr.life.
You can also text us at 615-392-1358. And for more exclusive content, head over to NashvilleDailyPodcast.com. Nashville Daily is produced right here in the great city of Nashville. So if you like what we're doing, please give this podcast a 5-star rating and share it with your friends.